Okay, folks, thanks for joining us for The Extra. Very exciting. We always get Friday started with our hometown hero, and we have John Avila, who's going to be joining us after this commercial break, talk about his time in the Marines and then serving as a firefighter. You know, we just love having people on who have the heart of a servant, who've, you know, fought for our country, and then also here who support our community. So if you have anybody you know of who you want to get on the show, it can even be a nurse, a teacher, somebody who's going above and beyond, feel free to shoot me a text at 719-232-1063. That's 232-1063. We'll get them on the show, and then the folks at Marigold's reach out to them, and they treat them to a wonderful dinner. Remember, Marigold's is up off Centennial, and then also their new South location off of 115. They got a lot of good food. Arguably some of the best ribs in town at the South location as their appetizers, which is kind of crazy. They got a fun menu down there at the South, and obviously some of the best desserts in town. So we do always a little day in history to get things started, and that is March 8th. You know, in 1965, Operation Rolling Thunder, and people say, well, what is that? That was the USA landed its first combat troops in South Vietnam. That was 3,500 Marines, and so it's apropos that we're having a Marine on the next segment here. But yeah, people tend to forget, hey, this was the time that, you know, we had fearless soldiers going in, being the spear of the sword, entering into South Vietnam, and that was 3,500 Marines, and it was Operation Rolling Thunder. So if you have some kiddos at home, it might be a good opportunity to do a little bit of research, talk about Vietnam, talk about these heroes that stepped up and served our great country. Also in 1916, back March 8th, the U.S. invades Cuba for the third time. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get some more of those classic cars. Who knows? But you know, it's an interesting relationship. I challenge you to do some research on the USA and Cuba and what's evolved, even just over the last decade. So that gives you a little tidbit there today in history in the United States. And if you see especially a veteran from Vietnam, thank them, give them a handshake, tell them how much their service means to you, maybe buy them a cup of coffee. That's what we can do together as patriots of this great country, is encourage those who've sacrificed so much so we can enjoy the freedoms we get to enjoy every day. It's a beautiful thing, folks. So make sure you stick around. We're going to be right back talking with John Avila. Yeah, that's it, folks. We're going to be having a great time today, and we're going to have Dave Donaldson on for the third and fourth segment. We'll be back after these messages. All right, folks, thanks for sticking with us. We're into the hometown hero. We have John Avila joining us this morning, serving the Marines, also was a firefighter as well. John, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Justin.
Yeah, you got it. So tell us about, where'd you grow up?
So originally I'm from Southern California, around the L.A. area. I was born in a city called Montebello, which is just on the outskirts of L.A., then moved to Walnut, California, a little bit further from that. And from there, graduated high school, and then I left in 93, joined the Marine Corps, and ended up in North Carolina.
So how did you, I mean, was it just something you're going, hey, I don't know what branch I want to serve in, or how do you even get to the process of saying, hey, I want to serve my country? What did that look like?
So I grew up in a family that was very teacher and patriotic. So my father served in the Navy. My grandfather was in the Army. So I kind of have that that role model already of serving the country and being patriotic. And at that time, my aunt, her husband was in the Marine Corps when I graduated high school. And at that time, he was a sergeant. He retired a sergeant major after 30 plus years serving. And he was a huge influence of me wanting to be in the Marines. You can imagine kind of growing up in Southern California, growing up in the LA area wasn't the best environment. There was, you know, a lot of gangs and things going on. And I wasn't in a gang, but I definitely was kind of a troubled kid and getting into trouble and doing things that I shouldn't be doing. And so I was kind of at a point of transition of what am I going to do with my life? I can't keep doing this. I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to get, thrown in jail or something like that. So here comes my uncle, you know, why don't you consider the Marine Corps? So I went down to MCRD, which is down in San Diego. He took me around the base. I saw a bunch of cadets.
Break that down. The MC.
So MCRD is the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego. So there's only two places you can go to boot camp for the Marine Corps. It's in San Diego or it's in South Carolina, Parris Island.
Okay.
So those are the only two options. So if you live east of the Mississippi, you're going to South Carolina. If you live west of the Mississippi, you're going to San Diego.
Okay.
So he took me down there on a tour. I got to see kind of everything in action, saw cadets getting yelled at and hazed and all that good stuff. And I just kind of was like, this is what I'm going to do. I want to be a Marine. And so from that point on, went back home, told my parents, hey, surprise, joining the Marine Corps.
What was their reaction?
Mom cried. Dad was happy.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And so that was kind of it. And then I went through my schooling down in Oceanside. My MOS, my job was an Amtraker, which is basically like a big tank that floats in the water. So you can go from ship to sea to land all in one vehicle. It's a troop carrier. So the ramp comes down in the back. And grunts basically are carried in the back. They run out and do their assaults and stuff. And so it is a tracked vehicle that looks like a tank.
Wow.
Yeah. And then from there, after my schooling, I got stationed in North Carolina, which was not my first choice. I requested California, and I requested Hawaii and Japan, and didn't get any one of those.
You on the island line,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I was looking forward to that, but it didn't happen. So they sent me to North Carolina.
And what did you do there?
So there I was still part of a unit, 2nd Battalion Tracks, went on a deployment down to South America. There was no conflict or anything really going down there. We did a couple of observation missions with the SEAL team that was with us on the ship. We took them out to the jungles when we came across back on the Colombia and Ecuador side. Mm-hmm. And they went out, took pictures of roads and stuff that was used for drug trafficking and those types of things. And then brought them back to the ship. But that was the extent of that. And I was out there for about 7 months.
Okay, and where'd you go after that?
So after that, came back to the States, got out of the Marine Corps. A good friend of mine was from Lincoln County, New Mexico. So if you've seen Young Guns primarily was filmed all around Billy the Kid in Lincoln County. And I knew I wanted to be a firefighter after I got out. My plan was to go back to California and be a firefighter. Ended up in New Mexico. They were hiring. I applied just to apply. Thought it would be cool if, you know, they called me. Went back to California for about a month and a half, 2 months, and they called me. They had a position in their fire academy in Las Cruces. And then I said, Mom and Dad, I'm leaving again. I'm going to New Mexico. I'm going to be a firefighter.
And your mom cried and your dad said, good.
Yeah. Yeah. Same not reaction. So much on that one, but but they were both happy for me.
Good.
So moved. That was in... So I was in from 93 to 97 in the Marine Corps. So in 98 is when I moved to New Mexico. And I was there for, I lived there for just over 20 years. I was in the department for right around 19 years and then retired.
And what was your role down there?
So I was on an engine company and a truck company, promoted through the ranks over the years. I became an officer. I was a lieutenant and alternate battalion chief for my shift. And was an EMT, basically ran medical calls, was majority of what we ran. Even today, I believe the fire service in general runs primarily medical mm-hmm. calls, just due to the fact, you know, fire codes and better building materials and those things over the years have evolved. So there's less and less residential fires and more EMS calls. So that was primarily what I did.
Wow. And then what brought you here to the Springs?
So,
what led you, I guess, to get out of the fire
there? Well, I wasn't from Las Cruces.
Okay.
So that was a huge factor of it. To get out and do something different. But through the years, me and my buddies used to come up here, mountain bike, hunt, mm-hmm. camp, snowboard.
Yep.
And I just kind of fell in love with Colorado. And I knew that I was never going to return to California. I don't want to get into that, but just,
yeah, no kidding.
You know,
don't know why. I mean, they got a heck of a governor.
Yeah. It's a long story for that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there was a lot of different reasons why I didn't want to go back, and that had a lot to do with it was politics and just education, economy, and those things. I just felt I was better off not living there.
Yeah.
And so I knew that probably midway, three quarters of my way through my service in the fire department, I knew Colorado was going to be my destination. I just loved the outdoors, being active and all that stuff, and so this was a perfect fit for me. In addition to that, the city of Las Cruces and the state of New Mexico in general, PARA, has one of the best retirement plans for public service in the country. And so I had an opportunity to still make good money in retirement, retire young, and then pursue totally different things and just have different experiences.
Well, that's great. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, as you talked about getting into trouble as a kid and having that pivotal crossroad where it's Marines or
jail.
Life look different? And so good for you. I mean, it's, I'm assuming the Marines probably shaped you, I would guess you'd say, in a
it
you
did.
Are today. I mean,
it did. It
what,
did.
What was? Give us a little bit of just golden nuggets on the time that you served and what you got out of it.
I think discipline was one of the biggest things. By no means am I perfect or do everything 100% like I should be, but you know, I having leadership and kind of security to be in a stable environment really helped me out a lot. It gave me an opportunity to work on goals, understand who I was, I guess you could say, deep inside, with grit and perseverance. Because up until the Marines and the military, you know, I didn't really have a lot of positive role models in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so once I was exposed to that, it was a totally different environment for me. And I just felt like I thrived in that environment. And I think part of and majority of who I am today with my work ethic and discipline and those types of things primarily came from my time in the service in the Marine Corps, really drilled that into me. And I know, you know, there's always that friendly competition of which military is the best. And So I'm always going to be partial towards the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a different aspect of camaraderie, teamwork. And I know all military strives to have that instilled into its members. But I think there is something different about the Marine Corps. And I take pride in that. And I try to, for the most part, instill most of those things that I learned into my day-to-day life.
Well, good for you, John. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. Thanks for your service.
Yeah.
And the folks at Marigold.
Thank you
reach
for your
out
support.
You.
Yeah, appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Hey, you got it. All right, folks, stick around. We have City Councilman Dave Donaldson joining us next. All right, folks, welcome into the third segment here of The Extra. Thanks for sticking with us. It was great. We got to have John Avilon, our hometown hero. He was a Marine, and Marigold steps up and does that every week. And I just want to emphasize for you radio listeners out there, if you see somebody in military service, whether it be a veteran, active duty, give them a handshake, give them some words of encouragement. It can go a long way, and that is the premises of the Hometown Hero, is lifting up these heroes in our community. And today we have the pleasure of talking with City Council Member Dave Donaldson. Dave, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
You bet, Justin. It's my pleasure to be here.
You got it. And give us a little bit of background so the listeners know what district you serve, how long you've been serving, and then also some of the, you know, objectives you have to kind of move the city in the right direction.
Okay. Briefly, I represent District 1, which is the northwest part of the city, and that has everything from the Garden of the Gods to Mountain Shadows to Peregrine, so all that west side down to Highway 24, and then across all the way to Academy. Fillmore's kind of the southern boundary, and say Woodman in the north is the northern boundary, over to Academy and even a little beyond that. UCCS is in there also.
Great.
In my background, just after what you had mentioned about a previous guest, I spent 21 years in the Army. I was initially an enlisted guy. I was a Russian linguist in military intelligence. Then I went into Special Forces, so I was a Green Beret. I was the 18 Delta, the medic on an SF team here in 10th Group. I spent 6 months in the American Embassy in Kazakhstan while I was in SF, kind of being the liaison with their special forces over there. Went on to become a physician assistant in the Army, a PA, and was commissioned at that point and promoted up to major. Went to Iraq 3 times, taking care of our troops and Iraqi police and other Iraqi forces.
Wow, that's a lot of service there. I didn't know that, Dave, and unbelievable. That's a lot of time, a lot of sacrifice, I'm sure, for you and your family and the deployments. For the folks here at KRDO, we just want to say thank you for your willingness to serve our great country. It's people like you who step up, they answer the call that allow us to have the freedoms we get to enjoy every day.
Well, I appreciate that, and there were many years away from home. You know, like I said, 3 of them in Iraq, and it does take a toll on the family. The last 3 years, I've served the city on city council, as I said, representing District 1. What do I think we need, or what were my goals? Initially, my brother is a police officer. He's recently retired out in North Carolina, and one of the things that motivated me to run for office was I saw how the country was kind of falling apart after the George Floyd thing, and I'd always been interested in service and politics, and our councilman, which was Don Knight, he was term limited, and I wanted to be sure that we have council men and women who support law enforcement, kind of have common sense and understand the roles of municipal government, which is largely public safety infrastructure, which is roads, creating a good environment, a safe place for families and businesses to thrive.
That's so important because you're totally right. At that time in our country, it seemed like the police were getting all the blame. And, you know, it's not right because these are the men and women who every day say, hey, when everyone's running away, I'm going to run towards the danger and I'm going to put my life on the line to protect, you know, the citizens of this community. And I think we're so blessed here in Colorado Springs to have an amazing law enforcement, and we have to stand behind them. So I think you hit the nail right on the head there is, you know, supporting our law enforcement is such a pivotal thing.
You know, 100% agree. And that sometimes brings me into a position where I'll oppose what the mayor's office or the mayor himself sees as the right way to go. For example, when we passed our budget this year, part of that budget cut every department throughout the city the same amount, 3.4%, every single one. Police got cut 3.4%. Parks got cut 3.4%. The Office of Innovation got cut 3.4%. To me, that's not really good leadership. That is just treating every office the same. We need to prioritize things. When you and I ran, when we were running for city council, you tell citizens, hey, these are my priorities. And almost always, invariably, it's public safety starts as number one. Hard to understand the budget cutting everything the same if public safety is really our number one. So, you know, you may see that, and sometimes it can put me in a position where I don't go along with the crowd. I won't just kind of rubber stamp what others want to do. I try to stick by those values.
Yeah, I mean, very important now. I mean, especially as we see, and we've always had homeless issue here, and it's gotten greater as times go on. And when talk to folks now at Springs Rescue Mission, they say, you know, it really kicked off when we started legalizing, you know, marijuana, and we saw a huge influx of people. And now we have on our doorstep is you have the leadership in Denver who are busing down illegal immigrants and kind of passing, you know, the troubles off to us. And, you know, it's scary when you start to see we're already busting at the seams to have the amount of service here for our citizens, let alone, you know, illegal immigrants here in Colorado Springs now.
Yep, you're bringing up a great point there that Denver has invited a problem into their city by declaring themselves a sanctuary city. So they now have tens of thousands of, I call them illegal immigrants, in Denver, and they realize this is not sustainable. And so over the next few weeks, they're going to close four of their city. The city's going to stop funding four of their shelters. And so like the analogy for me, it's like your neighbor decides to, you know, rescue 50 dogs and they realize, hey, I can't do this. And they just let them loose out the front door. They're going to go somewhere. And we are concerned that could come to Colorado Springs.
And it's too bad because we have such great, I look at unbelievable nonprofits in this town. We have so many people who just, you know, the heart of a servant and willing to help. And it draws this fine line of, yes, you want to help, you know, somebody in need, but at the same time, you know, they're coming over here illegally. And you have to look at it a little more black and white, in my opinion, and go, we can't just accept everyone in. We wouldn't have a country. And the city of Colorado Springs is, in my opinion, a beautiful outlier of this state of Colorado, and would hate to see, like you said, cities like Denver who've said we're going to take them in, and they never thought of the repercussions, and now they're deciding to bust them down. And from what I've heard through the grapevine is we could be looking at as many as, you know, 4,000 within the next couple weeks.
Well, you raise you're hitting on the big issue. Right? You're hitting on the big issue is, you can have good intentions, right? But you have to be very practical about this and live in the real world. And so it's important to realize that over the last 3 years, we've had 9 million people cross the southern border. And those are the government. That's the federal government's numbers. 7.2 million we have processed. And then they say there's about 1.8 million, what they call getaways. And that's probably low. So it's probably more. 9 million people coming in our country across the southern border. It's more than the entire population of Colorado, plus the entire population of Wyoming, plus the entire population of Montana, plus the entire population of North Dakota, plus the entire population of South Dakota in 3 years. Now, you tell me, Justin, is that sustainable? Can the federal government keep doing that, letting 9 million people in every 3 years, and our society, our culture, our civilization succeed or just remain intact?
Yeah, it's you don't feel like there's a lot of common sense being used. I'll say it that much, and it's too bad because we have great leaders here in our city like yourself, and you know, you can only do so much when it's coming from the top down, right, with the feds, and then you also have our state making decisions at the state level that really go against what a majority of the citizens of Colorado Springs are saying. That doesn't make sense, and we get dragged into a lot of these issues, unfortunately, because of the way our state leans and right now the way our nation's leaning.
Yeah, you're hitting on it again. The state of Colorado, our governor and our state legislature have essentially made us a quasi-sanctuary state. There are two state bills that passed. One happened in 2019, and that was House Bill 1124. And I have a note written right here. The bill, among other things, prevents law enforcement officers from arresting or detaining an individual on the basis of their immigration status. It also prevents authorities from providing an individual's immigration status to federal officials. It takes precedence over local rules set by city council or county authorities. However, it leaves room for the cities to pass basically more lenient policies. I mean, you can't arrest, you can't ask questions about their status, but if you wanted to make your laws even worse, the state would allow that. So that was one. And then in 23, they passed another one, House Bill 1100, and it restricts the ability of local governments to detain immigrants on behalf of ICE. And that is one that our El Paso County Sheriff, Joe Roybal, went up and spoke at the state legislature this year, trying to get them to reverse that. And the bill that would have reversed it failed in the committee. So our state has essentially tied our law enforcement officers' hands here. I've talked to our chief of police. I've talked to Joe Roybal. If Justin Hermes calls up because you see five people that you are like 100% certain, hey, these people, they're illegal immigrants, the police won't even come and ask any questions because essentially they would be breaking state law to do that. Right, they have to be committing some kind of crime. And so that it does, it puts the city in a very hard spot on what can we do if these people come here. So
yeah, it ties your hands a little bit on the things you're able to do. And you got knuckleheads up there at the state. I mean, when you explain these bills, you sit and go, how did somebody with common sense come up with this, where our law enforcement can't do what they need to do to be effective? How does that make our state a better state to live in? I shake my head. It's disappointing to see the leadership up there making those decisions.
I agree. I agree. That's why in 22, I ran for the state house and lost. I lost here in House District 16, and the person who beat me, is fully on board with all those kind of policies. Let me look right here for a second. Oh, and so we're in such a dangerous environment. That's what I take out of this. The federal government, the state government, Denver, have done such a bad job. It puts Colorado Springs in a dangerous environment. And for that reason, we have to be very, very clear in the messages we send out of Colorado Springs. I believe that the clearer the message is that we do not want illegal immigrants here, and we aren't going to support it, and we aren't going to spend taxpayer dollars on it. We're going to do everything we can to just move them along to a city that says they welcome, they call them migrants. That's going to be our response. Why do we want to send that message out? Because these nonprofits in other cities, say Denver, when they're looking around for like, where can we send these people? We don't want to look like we aren't really sure what we're going to do, or maybe we're going to try to support them as best we can. Because I think that attracts the problem to us. And that's where I have had some issues with what our mayor has said in some of his public statements. And I don't want to go on too long, but if you like, I will quote one of those and just tell you what I think the problem is.
Go ahead.
So, you know, the mayor stated, and this is a direct quote, "I came here through the more traditional way of the immigration story, going through the proper channels and the right paperwork." And now he's going to talk about the people who are crossing the border. "These families are looking for opportunity, and hence the federal government needs to step up to ensure that they are taken care of." And I wrote an editorial in the Gazette about a week ago. And what I said is, first, it's concerning that the mayor thinks he came here, quote, the more traditional way, as if we have options to do it the traditional way or some new non-traditional way. He came here the legal way. That's the only way foreigners should enter our country. Millions of people crossing our southern border anywhere other than at one of the 50 authorized crossing points are showing disdain for our laws as their initial act to enter our country. To then claim asylum after they are caught doesn't change how they initially entered our country. And that's why I call them illegal immigrants, whether they have the little number that the Border Patrol gets them once they catch them. And secondly, just because a family or an individual is, quote, looking for opportunity does not mean that, quote, the federal government needs to step up to ensure they are taken care of. If they entered the country illegally, then the federal government needs to step up and ensure they are deported. And that is the message I think our leadership in this city needs to send. That's why I wrote and I sponsored a resolution which we passed on council saying that we aren't a sanctuary city, we aren't going to spend taxpayer dollars on this, and we called on the federal government to enforce the border, and we stated that we stand in solidarity with the other states that are dealing with this problem.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't say it any better there. I mean, that really sums it up. And, you know, I've had some people I've talked to who go, why wouldn't you just, if they come down here, you put them back on a bus and you drive them back over the border and say, hey, you need to come through the right way. And I've talked to several people who were immigrants, right? And they're going, this is BS. You know, I did the hard work and I came through the right way. They're more frustrated than I feel like some of the people who are natives to this country. And they're going, these people are cheating the system. What are we doing? And it does set a standard. Like you said, you have somebody coming in the country and you're going, hey, it's a free for all. And, you know, you break the law, it's okay. You know, we're going to support you. And the sad thing is we're seeing many of these individuals across the border continue to break the law. And, you know, whether it be, you know, really harming the police officers in New York, you saw that incident. You've seen many in California, you know, that have been violent criminals. These aren't people who are coming here. You know, a majority of them are not coming here to contribute. It is coming here and, you know, causing harm to, you know, people who are living in our country and working hard and trying to accomplish the American dream.
Yeah, and in the last few days, you know, we've seen the really tragic events in Georgia where the nursing student, Laken Riley, was murdered by an illegal immigrant from Venezuela. I believe he had a record in Venezuela. The guys who beat up the police in New York, they had records in Venezuela. If we had the proper immigration system, the way it's supposed to work is they apply to enter into the country and they get screened. They get screened for medical conditions and problems and diseases, and they get screened for crimes. And immigration should make America stronger. We should be allowing people to enter a country who can contribute to the country. It's not everybody in the world's right to come into America. We don't have some moral obligation to take every person who wants to come into the United States. You know, there's 7.5 billion people outside the United States. Our entire population is 340 million. if only 10% of them wanted to come into the United States, that'd be 750 million. That's twice our current population. So it doesn't work. And again, that's what worries me when the mayor says stuff like, well, these are good people. It's the federal government needs to help them out. Well, what if the federal government says, okay, Colorado Springs, you know, here's X amount of dollars. We want to put them there. We want to put, you know, 50,000 of them in your city. That won't be good. Okay, so we have to have a clear message. And the message is, hey, we welcome people who immigrate into the United States the proper way. To have millions just come across the border and then declare that they're really, you know, seeking asylum is not the way that system was ever intended to work. And it will damage our country irreparably, is what I would say. In London right now, you know, London, England, the number one boy's name at birth for babies. Do you have any idea what it is, Justin?
Let's hear it.
It's Muhammad. And so, do you, you know, England and Europe, they also face a problem with uncontrolled immigration. And so is England going to be the same when it is, when it's a majority Arab country? Is it? No, it's not. And so no nation has the responsibility or the moral obligation to just take in unlimited numbers of foreigners. The citizens of the United States should choose, hey, how many foreigners do we want to allow in the country each year so that we can control the future of the United States?
Not to mention, you know, get the federal government who it's not like they have a surplus of money. You know, being able to say, "Hey, we can help support here. We're strapped at the federal level." And you know, you bring up a lot of good points. And you know, it's unfortunate because you know it sounds like a lot of common sense, but there's you know, another side of the coin where people are you know, thinking this is sustainable and. It simply isn't, and you have the facts you shared today, and we got to wake up, you know. So I appreciate.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I appreciate you know, serving, being a strong voice, and you know, like you said, you have to make it you know, very apparent that you know the city of Colorado Springs isn't going to continue accepting the illegal immigrants being bused down from Denver. We just don't have the capability to do that.
I don't know how much time we have left.
We've got about a minute.
Okay. Locally in Colorado Springs, like I said, the city council passed that resolution. It was intended to be a very clear statement. The disappointing thing is in the media, it immediately, they stress, well, this is just a political statement. It doesn't really mean anything. They gave a lot of time to the people that opposed it from the socialists. The Democrats, Socialists of America, and immigration activists, they gave them much more time than they gave those of us who sponsored and supported it. So I would ask, like, your listeners, don't be silent. You know, call in to shows like this. Send letters to the editor of the Gazette. Send letters to your city council member, your mayor, your county commissioners. And let them know your concerns that, hey, we love Colorado Springs the way it is. We do not want to see it overwhelmed. We're a tourist town, right? It has to stay a beautiful, nice place. Let's keep it how it is.
Exactly. That's great. Councilman Dave Donaldson, thanks for joining us this morning. Look forward to having you on the show a little bit more as we go throughout the year.
All right, Justin. I look forward to it also, and thank you for the chance today.
You got it. All right, folks, that's another show of The Extra in the Books. You have Tom Martino joining you next.